Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. On the day before Friday, the weekend's almost here. We can get out in these streets and party and kick it. I'm going to the Lake of the Ozark. No, I'm not. Anyway, got a fantastic show planned for you today. Jim Jackson's going to join us in the next segment. We're going to talk about Clyde Drexler, the latest former NBA star to have a problem with Michael Jordan. Also, stick around. In about 25 minutes, we're going to discuss Colin Kaepernick's tweet that seems to be supporting rioting in Minneapolis. We'll get into that. But first, we're going to start with Tom Brady, and we're going to go to Ohio and bring in our friend Eric Mangini, former NFL head coach, former defense coordinator for the New England Patriots. We're going to start with the new Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback, Tom Brady, otherwise known as the GOAT and an 8-handicap golfer. WEEI radio host and former Major League Baseball player Lou Maloney had some interesting comments about the new Tom Brady that we're seeing down in Tampa. We're seeing more of Tom Brady's personality. Take a listen to Lou Maloney, radio host in Boston. I don't think he's a fan of the new Tom Brady.
I'm not so sure I like the new Tom Brady. I'm starting to worry about it. You know, he defended him the whole, like, TB12 supplements. And then the video came out. I don't know what it was, Thursday or Friday. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, just enough. He doesn't have, like, the personality of Peyton. You know what I mean? He doesn't have the personality of Phil Mickelson, joking around, whatever. I'm not so sure putting himself out there is really a good thing.
You can match wits with
him. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he's not, like, you know, witty. I don't know. Like, I think he should just concentrate on playing football and let us judge him on his football. Because I'm not so sure this is going to be a good thing.
All right, Marcel, let's get us rolling here. Do you agree with Lou Maloney that perhaps Tom Brady shouldn't be putting so much of his personality out there and should just stick to football?
No, and you know I don't. Tom Brady should focus in and concentrate on being Tom Brady, which is more than just a Patriot way machine. And that's what Tom Brady has been for 20 years in terms of his personality being suppressed. And finally, you're seeing a guy who has come to the realization that there are other ways up that mountain, other ways to express yourself and still be successful at the game of football. You know what I mean? Off seasons, Tom Brady has shared stories with other players, lesser players than himself, and hearing how much more fun, more enjoyable their experience is than his. And let's be real, Tom Brady has not won the Super Bowl every single year. So this is not just a marriage of his personality to championship success. Even in failure, he was suppressed. So Tom Brady's looking at this situation like, you know what I've learned from this experience with Bill Belichick and the Patriots? It's been amazing on the football field, but not so much off the field in terms of Tom Brady starting TB12. Let's go back to the first shot fired of Tom Brady losing his parking spot and his VIP status with the team, him giving money to the team to sign Wes Welker back, and then that didn't happen, and he didn't get the money returned. And then Alex Guerrero, the co-founder, his partner in TB12, limited access. Like, Tom Brady came to a realization that there's another way of doing it outside the Patriot way. So I respect him and his newfound personality, no matter how funny or not funny it may be.
Yeah, I don't see this as being any problem at all. I think in that interview as well, the reporter had said, this isn't our Tom Brady. Well, guess what? It's not your Tom Brady anymore. He's no longer a Patriot, and it sounds like a little bit of sour grapes. What's he really done? He went on Howard Stern, so that was a couple hours of his life. He did a TikTok with Giselle. There's 30 minutes. Oh, yeah, he played a charity golf tournament and raised $20 million for COVID relief. What a horrible guy. I think what they should be focused on, or what Tom needs to be focused on, is Tampa Bay's offense, and he is. And the best thing that Tampa Bay can do is make the offense as conducive to Tom Brady as they possibly can. He's going to study. He has been studying. He'll maximize whatever they give him. And it's not about these few minor things he's done outside of football.
Yeah, I got to agree with you all in the sense that if this is Tom Brady letting his hair down, it doesn't go past his shoulders. I'm not sure if it goes past his ears. Because all that's really happening here with Tom Brady is the coronavirus. If there was no coronavirus, Tom Brady wouldn't be playing in a charity golf event all mic'd up. If there was no coronavirus, Tom Brady would be on a football field, all in with his teammates, learning the offense. And yes, he might be slightly different than the Tom Brady in Tampa, but the coronavirus has prevented Tom Brady from being Tom Brady. Because on a new team, with a new offense and with new teammates, we know where Tom Brady would be at age 43, on a football field, singularly focused on football. Yes, you may see a bit more of his personality, but again, like I said, if this is him letting his hair down, it ain't, his hair is not very long. It just doesn't go. It doesn't, certainly doesn't go to the floor. He's not Dennis Rodman. He's not Rob Gronkowski. I think we knew that. The charity event, just like you said, raised $20 million and turned out to be a good look for Tom Brady once he started knocking in a few shots. So let's move on from this and talk about another quarterback who really is trying to adjust his personality. Baker Mayfield, as I like to call him, Little Smokey, is saying, is promising there's going to be less smoke this year, and he's going to try to let his play do the talking. Listen to Baker Mayfield talking with reporters yesterday.
I have a different approach to this year. You know, I think it's everybody that has been interviewed in our team has kind of, you know, hit the nail on the head over and over about, you know, it's just time to work. It's time to do our thing instead of talking about it. So this is the first media thing I've done just because there's no need to be talking about it. It's just time to go do it. And right now it's, you know, kind of moving in silence, which is fine with me.
All right, Marcellus, you think this approach by Baker Mayfield will actually snap him out of his struggles? Will it help at all?
No, it won't help. And it's kind of sad. And I've had teammates like this before where they're going through their psychosis for public display. They're talking out loud, trying to convince themselves, but we all are now privy of hearing what's going on, that inner turmoil that's going on between the ears of Baker Mayfield. Sad place to be, for real. And I'm going to tell you why. He's trying to project to us that there's some kind of link between his offseason in terms of talking and what he does in season in terms of production. And that's been a storyline, narrative, myth that's been sold to fans for many, many years. You go out there and say, you know what? This year, I'm focused. This year, I'm just going to stick to the script. This year, I'm just going to follow protocol, do all the right things, and that's going to lead to success in during the season. I wish it was that simple. I knew so many fall-in-line soldiers, war paint, yes, sir, no, sir, great students of the game that were just plain sorry. And I knew some guys who didn't take care of themselves, weren't the best teammate, falling asleep during meetings and go out there and ball till they fall. So what he's not doing, which is dishonest, is introducing the third horse in this race. It's not talking, focus, or just production. It's work, strategic work. Baker Mayfield, I don't care how much you talk or don't talk. Talk about how strategically you're working at your craft to get better. You don't have to be silent to do that, and you don't have to be boisterous to do that. I think he lost sight of what was most important, which was that third horse, work. And now everyone's just going to think a quieter Baker Mayfield is going to be a better Baker Mayfield at quarterback. Wait for that, because they are not married. What happens on May 28th ain't the same that's going to happen on September 28th, brother. So you can fool a lot of people out there with this one, but I just hope that you're doing the most important thing, which is just work right now.
I think you're being a little bit hard on him, Marcellus. And to me, you can't work on your weaknesses until you acknowledge that you have weaknesses. And one of the things that we've seen with him, or at least it looks like we're seeing with him, is some maturity. And Rodney Harrison told me years ago, the league has a way of humbling you. And we've all seen those great, great young players that come in that don't understand what work looks like, that thinks they can do what they did in college, and that's good enough. But they go through this humbling process, they go through this learning process, and the league teaches them what that work looks like if you really want to be successful. And the good players are the ones that understand okay, this is how I have to adjust my game. And there are those guys that are so talented, they never have to adjust their game. And there are those guys that are just company guys, and that's how they survive a long time. But the truly great players and the players that develop are the ones that understand, okay, I have weaknesses, I need to work on weaknesses, and none of those things are going to be solved by talking about them. They're going to be solved by acknowledging them and then putting a plan in place to try to overcome them.
Yeah, I agree with Eric Mangini. I actually like this move by Baker Mayfield. Will it help? Who knows? Is it the right thing to do? Yes, I think without question it's the right thing to do. And I say that because I think what Baker Mayfield is doing that's unstated here is that the entire Cleveland Browns team, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., the critical foundational players for the Cleveland Browns, I think have made a pact. We went into last season, too much noise around us, too many little distractions. Baker Mayfield, you don't need to be beefing with Colin Cowherd and other people in the media. Let's let our work. And this, to me, has been the quietest offseason I've ever seen from Odell Beckham Jr. He hasn't been really doing things to draw attention to himself. So I think Baker's being part of a collective group effort and a mindset that they want to permeate that entire team is that it really is about the work. It's not about our mouth. It's not about what watch I'm wearing on game day. It's not about any of these other off-field distractions. I think Baker Mayfield was humbled last year. I think OBJ was humbled last year. I like the way they're handling this offseason, and I like the fact that Baker Mayfield is acknowledging we're going to, from a personality perspective, we're going to be a bit different here in Cleveland this year, and as the quarterback, I need to be a part of setting that tone. I actually like this, Marcellus.
Not me. I'm not letting anyone steal my fuel, my octane. Don't let them steal your mojo. That's how you got up this mountain. For anyone who's saying, oh, you know what, it's time for him to change course in terms of behavior, it's been uberly successful for Baker Mayfield, a two-time walk-on, Heisman Trophy winner, had a great rookie season, NFL record-setting rookie season. And then finally he realizes in competition, sometimes you lose. Finally he realizes sometimes they hit back. Oh, these are grown men who have honed their craft to a level where I need to adjust. But what you need to adjust in is the specific strategic surgery on the field. You don't have to change how you walk around in the offseason. Do you? And it's funny, he's letting them steal what made Baker Mayfield have that underdog mentality, that special juice. So now he's just going to fall in line. Sounds good to me. But I remember hearing some of the war stories of Deion Sanders and Jerry Rice, and at times they would be a little bit of a beef within the team of how to approach a game as a personality. And Deion told Jerry, like, look, Jerry, you do it your way, and I'm going to do it my way because my way has been successful. I just think that Baker Mayfield needs to be honest. They hit back, and they hit you hard last year. And now you need to hit back harder next year. But this whole going back to the drawing board and your essence, it sounds good to investors and ticket holders. But to a guy who's been on that field before, you better stick to your script.
Marcellus is the only guy on May 28, 2020 who would in any way put Baker Mayfield in the same sentence with Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders. You just saw it here on Speak for Yourself.
I knew you.
We're going to keep rolling.
That's
Jim Jackson just around the corner. Clyde Drexler took a shot at Michael Jordan. Is Clyde just bitter or does he have a point? We'll get into that with Jim Jackson from his crib. Speak for Yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a Thursday, the day before Friday. All right, we're going to keep the conversation rolling and move to the NBA and Michael Jordan. More fallout from the Last Dance documentary. We'll bring in Jim Jackson from his crib to talk about it. All right, former Portland Trail Blazers star, NBA Hall of Famer. Clyde Drexler, we can add him to the list of people who clearly have a problem with Michael Jordan. Drexler, in an interview, basically called Michael Jordan immature and disrespectful to his former peers and competitors from his playing days. Take a listen to what Drexler had to say about Air Jordan.
That's Michael's documentary. Of course, obviously it's going to be from his perspective. And a lot of times guys didn't like each other from other teams. But as you get older, you got to get beyond all of that and show some love and some respect for the people you play with and against. This is a team game. It's not one guy. I mean, you could have 50 points and 40 rebounds, but if you lose, are you less of a player than anybody on the other team?
Listen, I think Clyde makes a somewhat legitimate point here that at his age, Michael Jordan should be showing a little bit more respect and affinity for the guys he competed with and against. Marcellus, is Clyde Drexler bitter here, or does he have a point?
He has a point, a tremendous point at that. And you don't have to be old. You don't have to be elderly to start to respect and revere the guys you played against, your opponents, your foes. It's called the post-game handshake, damn it. And as soon as the game's over, you realize, oh, let me turn this switch off, shake your hand, and give you your props. Many of the wars that I had out there, whether Walter Jones, Orlando Pace, especially Lincoln Kennedy, we would talk before the game and then give each other hell, them giving me more hell than I gave them in return. And then after it, you could just let that go. And I don't understand why MJ doesn't understand how this works, that dynamic. If MJ... Michael Jordan would stop punching down so much. If Michael Jordan would lift others and then say, as great as they were, here I am, people would actually have even more love for Michael Jordan. But instead, he likes to diminish all of those around him and then want us to sit there and sum that up and say, oh, you're great. No, you just are better than the diminished parts you just told us about. So I don't understand the mathematics mentally that he's computing right now, but it's actually undermining his greatness. Pump everybody else up. We know who you are. You're one of the two goats.
One of the two. I like that you threw that in there, Marcellus. And, you know, I don't think it's hate from Clyde's perspective because, one, I got a chance to know Clyde really well this year, last year, in the Big Three, when he was a commissioner and also a coach. But I had an opportunity to play during this era against a Clyde Drexler and, of course, Michael Jordan. And not at one point can I remember during Clyde's career he was ever pointing to about him. It's about Clyde Drexler. Yes, he went into eventually won a championship and went to Houston, was a part of that. But he always carried himself in a professional manner, meaning the team was first. So I understand his comments. Even when in the 92 finals, and I would happen to be coming out of college. It was a draft combine in Chicago. I was at, you know, game one or game two. I think it was game one when Michael Jordan had the 6 3-pointers. Even at that time when the media was trying to pit Michael against Clyde, Clyde kind of stayed out of the fray because he understood that in order for Portland to win, it wasn't about him and he and Michael Jordan going up again. It was about the Trailblazers trying to do what they needed to do to beat the Bulls. You know, so I respect what he's talking about because I teach my kids, my son, it's not about you. Yes, you can be a dynamic individual within a team structure, but understand something. In order to win and win big, you need those other, you know, 8, 9, 10 players that's right alongside of you to ensure that you have the best opportunity to win. And it's an unfortunate situation because when Michael played, Michael would give credit at times to a lot of different players. When asked whether he was the GOAT, he would always say it wasn't determined by him. He doesn't want to get into that conversation. He kind of brushed it off. But we go into the deep mindset of who Michael Jordan is. He's never going to turn it off. Some guys are just built different, made different. Mike is that type. Once he got away from UNC, that team atmosphere, Mike got into killer mode, and he's been that way ever since he's, you know, won those championships. More importantly, since he's retired.
Well, Jim and Marcellus, I think both of you made great points. And Marcellus, I really like your point in terms of if Michael Jordan would celebrate the people he competed against, it would actually lift Michael even higher. And that's my whole problem with Mike and Isaiah and the Pistons. And this is where I think Isaiah and these guys, when you start calling him an undeserving champion, bad for basketball, well, come on, man. You just diminished them. And really been unfair, and I don't blame the Pistons for really having a strong response to that. I do think Clyde's a bit bitter here. He wouldn't watch the documentary. He wouldn't consent to an interview for the documentary. but I think he has a very legitimate point about Michael Jordan. The things that drove him to greatness as a player, the fact that he couldn't let it go, he held on to grudges, he found ways to convince himself that people were slighting him. That made him the great competitor and basketball player he is today. But now, at 56, 57, 58 years old, the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, as a statesman, this mindset diminishes him. And so when he's sitting back putting together a documentary that is celebration to me of the greatest era of NBA basketball to me of any time, the 80s and the 90s, he should have been focused on lifting up a Karl Malone, a Isaiah Thomas, a Charles Barkley, a Clyde Drexler, the people he competed against. One of the knocks on Michael Jordan is like when he won his championships, it was after Michael and Larry and Isaiah had diminished from the 80s and the 90s. He should be celebrating the Reggie Millers and these guys of that era. He just can't seem to do it. He's trapped in a mindset that served him well as an athlete and a competitor, and a mindset that does not serve him well in retirement. It's a really bad look for Michael Jordan. Marcellus, if you got a follow-up quickly before we move on.
Yeah, I just want to push back that he learned a team concept at UNC and then got into selfish mode and didn't change his mindset from there. He actually did. Don't forget those first round exits 3 years in a row when he didn't have a team around him, and then all of a sudden Pippen, Horace Grant come and they never lose in the first round again, and then they go out there and win their championship. So Michael Jordan knows how to turn it on and off. Let's not get caught up in what he's doing in terms of media manipulation. That said, man, look, he's just stubborn, and I respect it. It's not so much competitive spirit. He's just stubborn right there. It's some liquor store eyes, man. My Uncle Benefield had them. Stubborn dude.
But here's a mistake we're making. Michael Jordan showed us who he was, especially at the Hall of Fame speech when he went back and kind of went off on the dude that he got cut for. We're trying to make him into somebody he's not. He's already telling us who he is, okay? I accept who Michael Jordan is. So if he's going to keep, you know, punching down, okay, I'm not trying to make him somebody else he's not and not asking a question to why he's not going to change. He's already showed us who he is. So I'm going with that.
Disagree, Jim. That's 350, 360-pound Jason Whitlock has to go away. Has to be made new into somebody else. Michael Jordan, now that he's done playing, he needs to be made into
something.
Look, man, bitterness and all this anger, it only hurts the person carrying it. All right, we're going to move on very quickly to the NBA season restarting. And a lot of people, or there's already speculation, about the new format, what will it mean, what will the quality of play be like, which leads to the natural question, if they win a championship, whoever that team is, will they have an asterisk by it? Will it be as respected as other championships? Jim Jackson, go first here. You think whoever the champion is of this complicated season, will it be a respected title?
Well, it depends on the format and what happens, but in the short term, people tend to look at it that way. Kind of like what happened with the Spurs in 98-99 during the lockout season. It kind of put an asterisk on it a little bit, but as you push further away from it, it doesn't, because you still have to compete and win. I know it's not perfect, and this year is not going to be perfect because of the pandemic and what happened, but the NBA is trying to salvage what can be, I think, a trial and error situation in regards to maybe reseeding in the future playoff scenario. So, you know, I try to look at different sports as well where we had stoppages. You know, Joe Gibbs with the Washington Redskins had two seasons in which there were stoppages, but his teams won, a championship, the Super Bowl. But he's still a Hall of Fame coach. They don't talk about that the further you get away from it. So depending on what happens in this format, how they get the teams back online, yeah, people will talk about it from the beginning. But at the end of the day, as you move further away from the conversation, it's still a championship. They're still honoring what San Antonio did in the lockout season. I was there, only 51, 53 games. And LeBron's 2011, 2012, that still counts, and they're not taking that away from them.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know how sports fans think. If your team wins it, then it's a legitimate title. And if it's not, then all of a sudden you're going to have a gripe. You're going to have something to say. But for me, I think it is legitimate, no matter how you cut it, because the consequences will be universal. They will be applied to all teams, whether it's the shortened season or we go into the playoffs. Hey, we just taking the top eight in every conference. Let's just roll forward. But the penalty will be affecting all the same. So it's a legitimate title. But I know Laker fans who have the largest fan base will cry the loudest if they don't win the title, because we all, as NBA fans, have muscle memory of the Lakers clicking the longest. Yeah, I know Milwaukee had a better record, but if Milwaukee fails in this new edited format, we kind of look at last year and say, well, they failed last year. But LeBron, an aging superstar who had everything rolling, I think Laker fans would certainly have a gripe. And then you could go to the Clipper fans who were like, hey, we finally started to gel together and we were still right there and we weren't even playing our best basketball. Outside of those three teams, maybe Boston will have a gripe. The rest of y'all shut up. Y'all didn't have a chance in hell anyway. But those four two, those four teams right there, they got something to say about this.
Well, I just think if the Clippers, the Lakers, or Bucks win the title, no one will talk about Astrid. It'll be a legitimate title. Anybody else wins the title, and there's going to be like, man, if the season had rolled on like it's supposed to, Boston, y'all wouldn't have won this title. The Houston Rockets, y'all wouldn't have won this title. If it's one of the three big three, the Clippers, Lakers, or Bucks, Giannis, Kawhi, or LeBron, it'll be legitimate, it'll be forgotten. If it's not, because to me, the only team that I think really deals with an asterisk in NBA fans' minds is Hakeem Olajuwon's Houston Rockets, the 2 years Michael Jordan set out. Though that's the only titles I've seen where people kind of diminish it. Oh, Michael wasn't there. And to, Jim, you're right. LeBron's first title, compromised season, Tim Duncan. But now Tim Duncan's got five titles. No one says, well, he's got four and then that one doesn't count. Houston, and Houston, it would make sense for Houston to win this title with James Harden and Russell Westbrook and still fire Mike D'Antoni after winning the title. That would be the ultimate asterisk. All right, we got to keep rolling on. We're going to talk. We're going to return for some more conversation about Colin Kaepernick, who has weighed in on the events on George Floyd's death in Minneapolis. You got to hear what Cap said over Twitter. Rick Bucher will go out to the Bay Area. He'll join us next. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Well, back to Speak for Yourself from the crib on this Thursday afternoon. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, we're going to roll out to the Bay Area and bring in our friend Rick Bucher, a longtime sports writer in the Bay Area. Obviously was there during Colin Kaepernick's time with the San Francisco 49ers. And as expected, Colin Kaepernick has weighed in on the events rocking Minneapolis and the nation this week. The tragic death of George Floyd led to rioting and violence last night in Minneapolis. Colin Kaepernick this morning weighed in with a tweet. When civility leads to death, revolting is the only logical reaction. The cries for peace will rain down, and when they do, they will land on deaf ears because your violence has brought this resistance. We have the right to fight back. Rest in power, George Floyd. All right, we're all going to have our reactions here. We got some time here. I'm going to go first with just a short comment. My initial reaction to this is I wonder if Colin Kaepernick is on a flight right now to Minneapolis with a musket and ready to join this resistance and this fight that he appears to be calling for. I think it's irresponsible for people to sit at home and sit on a Twitter laptop and encourage and or inspire people to do things perhaps you're not willing to do. And maybe Colin Kaepernick will surprise me and he'll be in Minneapolis this weekend or this week and he'll be on the front lines. Or maybe he'll be in const in his mansion somewhere with Nessa and firing off tweets as people do, people risk their health, safety, freedom, and participate in acts that harm their community. If Cap does that from his home, he's the hypocrite that I think he is. If he's on the front line, I'll take his comments seriously.
Man, my initial response actually took me back to the beginnings of when Colin Kaepernick became the protester, the martyr he's become, the symbol he's become, is I never, ever had an issue with why Colin Kaepernick was protesting. I always had an issue with how he was protesting. And reading his tweet, if this is a call to action, is it also a support for more meaningless looting and rioting, especially in your own vicinity, your own locale? Like, I don't understand the call to action. So I'm sitting here ready to abide by the commands, Colin Kaepernick. What do you do? Where's the meaningful direct action that comes from this? And who is it directed towards? It takes me back to the football field in two ways. One, coach used to always say, I better never, ever hear about criticism about this team if it doesn't have a name and number attached to it. So it's okay to say do something, but you gotta be specific, because the game of football is specific, it's strategic. We just don't line up and hit color. I got to line up in this technique, and I have this to do. That's my responsibility. So Colin Kaepernick, in the world we all live in and are from, which is the football world, and now you're trying to translate this into something greater than football, I need honest, direct steps. And once again, I'm left with more questions to respond to a tweet than actual answers from a human being who's championing a protest. So I'm just sitting here saying, who's it directed towards? Don't be a coward. Names and numbers, brother.
Yeah, my first reaction is that there are subjects that are way too important and way too complex to try to possibly address them through social media or through Twitter. Twitter is aptly named and has the appropriate logo. It's birds. It's chirping birds. And it has about the same significance when it comes to important social issues. My second reaction is that this is more confusion, and this is what I struggled with when it comes to Colin Kaepernick. I know that he has invested time and money, that he has done grassroots things that have supported his cause and his activism. But he has been the worst frontman for any sort of social change because his message has been so confusing. I'm sometimes not sure whether he wants to be an athlete or an activist at times. And then exactly what is he trying to accomplish? This only adds to it. Is this a, as you mentioned, Marcellus, I don't know what he's saying here. Is this a call to violence? Is this a call to, I don't know. It doesn't add anything, and therefore it detracts from what is a very important subject, something that needs to be addressed and dealt with and changed. But I don't see that in anything that Colin is recommending here. And so it just seems that awfully self-serving to me without any accomplishment.
When I look at the people critically impacted in a real way by George Floyd's actions, and then I look last night to see a lot of people in the crowd who, it kind of took me back, like, wow, there's a lot of outsiders that seem to be joining this cause, and I'm wondering what their motives are. And I consider Colin Kaepernick an outsider based off zip code, where he was raised, who he was raised by. Has he ever been in a community where the impact of police brutality is really on the front lines? Has he been there in a real way? I'm sure he's visited there like a lot of limousine liberals, but has he ever really been there and seen who's going to be impacted by the actions he seems to be suggesting here? And again, I think it's very easy when you're not on the front lines and when you're sitting on a laptop to have somebody put together some words for you to tweet out. Because that's my other thing. When I read these words, they don't sound like Colin Kaepernick. We've heard him talk. These aren't his words. Someone has helped craft these words for him, and he's been a symbol from the word go. I think these words are irresponsible. I think he's an outside agitator. And I look at the people doing a lot of the outside agitating and seem to be wanting to pick a fight for black people, in my view. I'm going to just keep it all the way there. It's like they want to pick a fight for black people and start a race war and then go look at the images of the people that were out there. And then when it jumps off, let's see if they're still on the front lines or do they blend in and leave us out there on the front lines to harm our communities, to harm ourselves, to jeopardize our freedoms, to destroy our communities. There's a lot of outside agitating and people picking a fight for us that I think anybody strategically would know, like, oh, this ain't a fight we're going to win. We have to outthink this situation. If it comes down to the type of things Colin Kaepernick is suggesting, just based on numbers, we lose. So what is the strategy here? I don't see any. I'm going to stop here before I go too far. Marcellus, I'm sure you have some additional thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, man. Only time constraints will keep this conversation short, man, just because you are on to it, man. It just doesn't sound like the peaceful protester who lost his career because of those same peaceful protests. We went from peaceful protester to pretty much silent but doing his own work to now come out, and it sounds like guns ablaze. And he's writing checks that his experience and his existence won't have to cash, as Jason pointed out. And that's what I don't like about it. Okay, you saying let's protect our civility. Okay, who are we protecting it from, Colin Kaepernick? If it's using my life experience as a litmus test, a lot of them people look like me growing up. And now, if it's not that, no, it's not us, it's them. Who are them? Is it white people? Colin Kaepernick, where's the self-love? You're half white. You talking about white people? We're just going to start rebelling and revolting against white people? Oh, no, I don't mean that. Is it cops? Because there are a large majority of cops that are white that are tremendous. Or there are, like, members of my family that are cops that are tremendous as well. No, I'm not talking about the cops. I'm not talking about blanket white. What are you talking about then? Who is the target? And he won't even go there. It is simply a Hail Mary lob to Twitter troll those who won't think this through and critically analyze what he's trying to say. Once again, I know why he protested. And once again, I am so discouraged by how he wants to go about it.
All right, we got to move on. We're going to go out to LeVar Arrington's crib and talk about Jadeveon Clowney, who, according to reports, turned down a very lucrative offer from the Cleveland Browns. We'll tell you what to make of it. Speak for yourself from the crib more after this. All right, welcome back to the show. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Let's roll out to LeVar Arrington's crib and talk about Jadeveon Clowney, the big free agent defensive end who is yet to sign with a team. Reports have circulated over the past 24, 48 hours that Clowney balked at a very lucrative offer, or at least the richest one he's been offered this free agency period, from the Cleveland Browns. And the question here is, Marcellus, and we don't know the numbers, we don't know the specifics, but is this a bad look for Jadeveon Clowney?
No, it's not a bad look. And look, I almost took a trip into those hating waters and started to clown Jadeveon for this report. But then, like you said, what is that number? Riches. That's relative compared to what? We don't know what the other offers were. So what's rich to him may not be rich to others and vice versa. So I'm not sure what that number is. And that said, I still think it's a good look because all he's trying to do is build up his war chest. Just get some leverage. Just get it out there that somebody really, really wants him. And good for him and his agent to go through that process. It wasn't Cleveland Browns trolling. It was just, hey, man, we need to raise this ceiling. And the Cleveland Browns were serviced to do just that. But the number's not out there, so I can't say it's a bad look. But we're talking high numbers and Jadeveon Clowney in the same sentence today, which is obviously a good thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad look either. And listen, we've been having a lot of conversations surrounding quarterbacks. It's a vastly different conversation when you're talking by position. Defensive end is one of the best positions to actually sit and wait and look and hold off. If you go back to Charles Haley sat for years before the Niners came back in 99 and brought him onto a team on a 49ers team, and we all know how that ended. So when you look at a defense, and all money isn't good money, and Jadeveon Clowney isn't getting any younger, right? So when you're looking at what your opportunities may be, he may get a good penny to go to Cleveland, but am I looking at Cleveland as an opportunity to go to a great market and have a possibility of getting far in the playoffs, possibly contending for a Super Bowl? I think we all know the answer to that, even though they have a wealth of talent on their roster right now. So if I'm Jadeveon Clowney, he's in a perfect position to be able to sit back and vet his opportunities a whole lot differently than what we've been saying about guys like a Cam Newton. It's definitely a good look on Jadeveon's part.
Yeah, I think it's a bad look for the people that put this story out. Without a number, they've given us no context. They've done the bidding of somebody. I can't figure out where the agenda is. Is it the Cleveland Browns trying to embarrass Jadeveon Clowney? Is it Jadeveon Clowney's agent trying to hype up that, hey, he got offered a rich contract? But to me, the people that put the report out are being used by somebody. The only way this story has context and real value is if there's a number attached to it. Jadeveon Clowney turned down $18 million a year from the Cleveland Browns. That would tell me something, and that would make me draw some conclusions about Jadeveon Clowney. But this story, to me, it's like they're trying to put it out without a number and trying to shame Jadeveon Clowney, and maybe it's the Browns trying to get leverage with him. Maybe it's his agent trying to get leverage with other teams or whatever. But a bad look for Jadeveon Clowney? Nah, it's not. I have questions about Jadeveon Clowney and his motor and how his love for the game, and that may be preventing him from getting the kind of contract he's looking for. But this situation here, this issue here, I got no problem with Jadeveon Clowney. Hold the line. Don't do anything. Don't move. Wait for that real money to come your way. All right, speak for yourself. From the Crib rolls on. We're going to get out to Uncle Jimmy's crib and get his approval rating and thoughts on Baker Mayfield. Speak for yourself from the Crib. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Thursday. Happy day before Friday. All right, let's roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib, get his thoughts on Little Smokey, Baker Mayfield. Uncle Jimmy, you suited and booted today. You got a big dummy of the day?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. The big dummy of the day go to the person that came out here that think because they done lost all this weight, they can come out here with a polka dot shirt on, thinking that just now they look like Al Roker. Bro, that ain't no good look. Looking like somewhere between Al Roker and Al Sharpton. Which one you gonna be, bro?
Kwame.
You have any thoughts on Baker Mayfield?
Look here, man.
You got any thoughts on Baker Mayfield?
Look here, man. This is the very reason that Kelly told y'all. I don't know how to hold time, people. Man, this is terrible. How something like this gonna happen to Baker, man? Baker too young. Man, he in the prime of his life, man. He one of the good ones. Hey, man, what y'all think it is? What y'all think they gonna say it is, man? Y'all don't think he got the sugar? The pressure? Man, they better not say it's the Rona. Oh, Lord, don't say it's the Rona, man. See, y'all missing the point. Baker told y'all. He said he gonna move silently. He said he's gonna move silently, and we ain't gonna hear from him no more. The only way that's gonna happen is if Baker Mayfield dead. I think you ain't got to always hold that, people. This is likely.
Baker, no. We love
Baker.
Oh, Baker.
My God. All right, thank God it's almost Friday. You saw our approval rating. Internet has been the dumpster fire. I want to wish my nephew.